When Hastings came down to breakfast late the following morning, after having slept long and well, he found himself eating alone. From Treadwell he learned that Edward Raynor had breakfasted much earlier and had gone back to his room to put some of Sir Claude's papers in order, that Mr. and Mrs. Amory had had breakfast in their suite of rooms and had not yet appeared, and that Barbara Amory had taken a cup of coffee out into the garden where she was presumably still sunning herself. Miss Caroline Amory had ordered breakfast in her room, pleading a slight headache, and Treadwell had not seen her subsequently. "Have you caught sight of Monsieur Poirot at all this morning, Treadwell?" Hastings asked, and was told that his friend had risen early and had decided to take a walk to the village. "I understood Monsieur Poirot to say that he had some business to conduct there," Treadwell added. After finishing a lavish breakfast of bacon, sausage and eggs, toast and coffee, Hastings returned to his comfortable room on the first floor, which offered a splendid view of part of the garden, and, for a few minutes, which Hastings found rewarding, of the sunbathing Barbara Amory as well. It was not until Barbara had come indoors that Hastings settled down in an armchair with that morning's Times, which had, of course, gone to press too early to contain any mention of Sir Claude Amory's death the previous evening. Hastings turned to the editorial page and began to read. A good half hour later he awakened from a light slumber to find Hercule Poirot standing over him. "Ah, mon cher, you are hard at work on the case, I see," Poirot chuckled.
"As a matter of fact, Poirot, I was thinking about last night's event for quite some time," Hastings asserted. I must have dozed off."
"And why not, my friend?" Poirot assured him.
"Me? I have been thinking about the death of Sir Claude as well, and of course the theft of his so important formula. I have, in fact, already taken some action, and I am expecting at any minute a telephone message to tell me if a certain suspicion of mine is correct or not."
"What or whom do you suspect, Poirot?" Hastings asked eagerly.
Poirot looked out of the window before replying.
"No, I do not think I can reveal that to you at this stage of the game, my friend," he replied mischievously. "Let us say that, as the magicians on the stage like to assure us, the quickness of the hand deceives the eye."
"Really, Poirot," Hastings exclaimed, "you can be extremely irritating at times. I do think you ought to at least let me know whom you suspect of having stolen the formula. After all, I might be able to help you, but—"
Poirot stopped his colleague with an airy gesture of his hand. The little detective was now wearing his most innocent expression and gazing out of the window meditatively into the far distance.
"You are puzzled, Hastings?" he asked. "You are wondering to yourself why I do not launch myself in pursuit of a suspect?"
"Well, something of the kind," Hastings admitted.
"It is no doubt what you would do if you were in my place," observed Poirot complacently.
"I understand that.
But I am not of those who enjoy rushing about seeking a needle in a haystack, as you English say. For the moment I am content to wait. As to why I wait, eh bien, to the intelligence of Hercule Poirot, things are sometimes perfectly clear, which are not at all clear to those who are not so greatly gifted."
"Good Lord, Poirot," Hastings exclaimed. "Do you know, I'd give a considerable sum of money to see you make a thorough ass of yourself, just for once. You're so confoundedly conceited."
"Do not enrage yourself, my dear Hastings," Poirot replied soothingly. "In verity, I observe that there are times when you seem almost to detest me. Alas, I suffer the penalties of greatness."
The little man puffed out his chest and sighed so comically that Hastings was forced to laugh.
"Poirot, you really have the best opinion of yourself of anyone I've ever known," he declared.
"Ah, what will you? When one is unique, one knows it. But now to serious matters, my dear Hastings. Let me tell you that I have asked Sir Claude's son, Mr. Richard Amory, to meet us in the library at noon. I say ask, Hastings, for I need you to be there, my friend, to observe closely."
"As always, I shall be delighted to assist you, Poirot," his friend assured him.
At noon, Poirot, Hastings, and Richard Amory met in the library, from which the body of Sir Claude had been removed late the previous evening. While Hastings listened and observed from a comfortable position on the settee, the detective asked Richard Amory to recount in detail the events of the evening prior to his, Poirot's, arrival. When he had concluded his recital of events, Richard, sitting in the chair which his father had occupied the previous evening, added, "Well, that's about everything, I think. I hope I've made myself clear." "But perfectly, Monsieur Amory, perfectly," Poirot replied, leaning against an arm of the only armchair in the room. "I now have a clear tableau." Shutting his eyes, he attempted to conjure up the scene. There is Sir Claude in his chair, dominating the situation. Then the darkness. Then knocking on the door. Yes, indeed. A dramatic little scene. "Well," said Richard, making as if to rise, "if that's all..." "Just one little minute," said Poirot, with a gesture as though to detain him. Lowering himself to his chair again with an air of reluctance, Richard asked, "Yes?" "What about earlier in the evening, Monsieur Amory?"
"Earlier in the evening?"
"Yes," Poirot reminded him, "after dinner."
"Oh, that," said Richard. "Oh, there's really nothing more to tell. My father and his secretary, Rayner, Edward Rayner, went straight into my father's study. The rest of us were in here."
Poirot beamed at Richard encouragingly.
"And you did?"
"What?"
"Oh, we just talked. We had the gramophone on for most of the time."
Poirot thought for a moment, then,
"Nothing took place that strikes you as worth recalling?" he asked.
"Nothing whatever," Richard affirmed very quickly. Watching him closely, Poirot pressed on.
"When was the coffee served?"
"Immediately after dinner," was Richard's reply. Poirot made a circular motion with his hand.
"Did the butler hand it round, or did he leave it here to be poured out?"
"I really can't remember," said Richard. Poirot gave a slight sigh. He thought for a moment and then asked,
"Did you all take coffee?"
"Yes, I think so. All except Rayner, that is. He doesn't drink coffee."
"And Sir Claude's coffee was taken to him in the study?"
"I suppose so," replied Richard, with some irritation beginning to show in his voice. "Are all these details really necessary?" Poirot lifted his arms in a gesture of apology.
"I am so sorry," he said. "It is just that I am very anxious to get the whole picture straight in my mind's eye. And after all, we do want to get this precious formula back, do we not?"
"I suppose so," was again Richard's rather sullen rejoinder, at which Poirot's eyebrows shot up exaggeratedly, and he uttered an exclamation of surprise.
"No, no, of course we do," Richard hastened to add.
Poirot, looking away from Richard Amory, asked,
"Now, when did Sir Claude come from the study into this room?"
"Oh, just as they were trying to get that door open," Amory told him.
"They?"
queried Poirot, rounding on him.
"Yes, Rayner and the others."
"May I ask who wanted it opened?"
"My wife, Lucia," said Richard. "She hadn't been feeling very well all the evening." Poirot's tone was sympathetic as he replied,
"Ah, la pauvre dame. I hope she finds herself better this morning. There are one or two things I urgently desire to ask her."
"Oh, I'm afraid that's quite impossible," said Richard. "She's not up to seeing anyone or answering any questions. In any case, there's nothing she could tell you that I couldn't."
"Quite so, quite so," Poirot assured him. "But women, Monsieur Amory, have a great capacity for observing things in detail. Still, doubtless your aunt, Miss Amory, will do as well."
"She's in bed," said Richard hastily. "My father's death was a great shock to her."
"Yes, I see," murmured Poirot thoughtfully.
And there was a pause. Richard, looking distinctly uncomfortable, rose and turned to the French windows. "Let's have some air," he announced. "It's very hot in here."
"Ah, you are like all the English," Poirot declared, smiling. "The good open air, you will not leave it in the open. No, it must be brought inside the house."
"Well, you don't mind, I hope?" Richard asked.
"Me?" said Poirot. "No, of course not. I have adopted all the English habits. Everywhere I am taken for an Englishman."
On the settee, Hastings could not help but smile to himself.
But pardon me, Monsieur Emory, is not that window locked by some ingenious device?
Yes, 'tis, replied Richard, but the key to it's on my father's bunch of keys, which I have here. Taking a bunch of keys from his pocket, he moved to the French windows and undid the catch, flinging the windows open wide. Moving away from him, Poirot sat on the stool, well away from the French windows and the fresh air, and shivered, while Richard took a deep breath of air and then stood for a moment, looking out at the garden, before coming back to Poirot with the air of someone who has arrived at a decision.
"Monsieur Poirot," Richard Amory declared, "I won't beat about the bush. I know my wife begged you last night to remain, but she was upset and hysterical and hardly knew what she was doing. I'm the person concerned, and I tell you frankly that I don't care a damn about the formula. My father was a rich man. This discovery of his was worth a great deal of money, but I don't need more than I've got, and I can't pretend to share his enthusiasm in the matter. There are explosives enough in the world already."
"I see," murmured Poirot thoughtfully.
"What I say," continued Richard, "is that we should let the whole thing drop."
Poirot's eyebrows shot up as he made his familiar gesture of surprise.
"You prefer that I should heap out?" he asked. "That I should make no further investigations?"
"Well, yes, that's it." Richard Amory sounded uncomfortable as he half turned away from Poirot.
"But," the detective persisted, "whoever stole the formula would not do so in order to make no use of it."
"No," Richard admitted. He turned back to Poirot, but still...
Slowly and meaningfully, Poirot continued. "Then you do not object to the... how shall I put it? The stigma?"
"Stigma?" exclaimed Richard sharply.
"Five people," Poirot explained to him. "Five people had the opportunity of stealing the formula. Until one is proved guilty, the other four cannot be proved innocent."
Treadwell had entered the room while Poirot was speaking. As Richard began to stammer irresolutely, the butler interrupted him.
"I beg your pardon, sir," he said to his employer, "but Dr. Graham is here and would like to see you."
Clearly glad of the opportunity to escape further questioning from Poirot, Richard replied, "Well, I'll come at once," moving to the door as he spoke. Turning to Poirot, he asked formally, "Would you excuse me, please?" as he left with Treadwell. When the two men had departed, Hastings rose from the settee and approached Poirot, bursting with suppressed excitement.
"I say," he exclaimed, "poison, eh?"
"What, my dear Hastings?" asked Poirot.
"Poison, surely," Hastings repeated, nodding his head vigorously.